21. A Lesson in Navigation. September had passed into October. Dragging October, at last, finally yielded to November. The conditions on board the Mayflower grew remorselessly worse and worse. The relieving days shortened. The long, weary nights lengthened. Less and less time could be spent above. More and more time had to be spent in dark confinement below. The stale air below decks became ever more stale. The cramped passengers even more cramped. They had grown so used to bending their necks in between decks that they wondered if they would ever be able to stand upright again. The dry biscuits had long since been reduced to a mere powder in the barrels, and that a foul breeding ground of weevils. The tough salt meat grew tougher and saltier. The pilgrims all became sick, heartily sick, of the continual heaving of the Mayflower. Will this voyage never end? Voyage? It was an imprisonment, a nightmare, a dreadful, terrifying, nauseating, endless nightmare, on and on without respite. Monotonous, wearisome, painful, inexorable. And day after day the endless, unfriendly ocean, remote and vast. The pilgrims came to detest their bitter existence. Would land never come into view? Was it a limitless sea upon which they sailed? Was there any America to be reached after all? Were they lost? Lost upon a trackless sea? Would they run short of food and perish in starvation? They knew that if another storm hit them, their condition was so pitiable, their strength so puny, they and the vessel surely must succumb this time. Would it not be better to die? Oh, to end this miserable, wretched sameness, day after weary day, night after dreary night. One sharp, cold November morning, a withering, relentless wind was beating off the sea, and the children were wasting their hours on deck. It had grown far too cold to endure lessons in the open, and they had long been abandoned with much misgiving by Mrs. Lovelace, but with undisguised relief by the children. Thus it happened that the children were wasting their morning hours on deck. Their eyes were fixed towards the western horizon, lost in a vague dream. They were mummified, blissfully unaware of his actions. Justice absent-mindedly fingered a coiled rope. Prudence it was who was called back to the reality of their presence on the Mayflower. She sighed. Will it never end? Must we endure it forever? She sighed again. Justice said nothing. He was still lost in his vague dream. Prudence looked back around the weary, pathetic ship. Her eyes took in the confusion of tackling, and the still damaged, scarred reminders of the tempestuous days past. Her eyes fell upon the captain as he strutted amongst his men, carrying out his routine inspections and encouraging the sailors to renewed efforts. He was a fine, full figure of a man, portly, formidable, and imposing. He amply and comfortably filled his handsome costume. Prudence thought he must have been poured into his clothes and stopped being called only just in time. Suddenly, an idea struck her. Impatience obtained the mastery. She just had to obey the impulse. She shook Justice. She rattled him to life. Let's ask the captain. Let's ask the captain. Ask the captain? Ask the captain what? He replied sleepily, and with just a tinge of irritability. Ask the captain why, how much longer we shall be, stupid. What? Queried Justice, still dazed, growing increasingly impatient, and only half aware of his sister's meaning. What? Ask the captain what? Listen, will you? Don't get cross. Ask the captain how long it will be before we get to America, of course. Leave it, Prudence, leave it, do. No. Come on, let's ask. With forceful vigour she dragged her brother back towards the captain, who was by now busily and heatedly engaged in conversation with one of his men. "Come on, don't drag. Leave it, Prudence. Forget it, leave it." But Prudence was not so easily to be denied. She put her head down, clenched her teeth, and pulled. To her surprise, she looked up, and there she was, almost bumping into the awesome master of the Mayflower. She glanced up into his weather-tanned face with his fine, well-trimmed beard. Warm, shining eyes answered her inquiring glance. Prudence felt relieved. "Well, well, a deputation, is it?" brightly said the captain, a mischievous smile playing in his eyes. "Complaints, eh? Let's be a-having of 'em." "Complaints? Oh, no, sir. No, with respect, sir. It's nothing like that. It's, she stammered in reply. "Well, speak out, my dear, speak out. Let's hear what you have to say." He dropped his voice, lowered his head, and went on. "I won't bite you, you know," he confided. "I won't have you flogged at the mast. Not very hard, anyway." He laughed aloud, pleased with his joke, and slapped the children playfully about the shoulders. "Come on now, speak up." "Well, sir, it's like this. When will we be in America? How much longer have we got to stay at sea?" "Tired of it, are you? Had enough of Mistress Atlantic, have you? Can't say I blame you. My young friends, you've had a hard time, I know, but listen, here's some good news. Let me tell you this. The worst is over for you. The worst is over. We shall soon see your new home, very soon now, very soon now." The children grew excited at this. "You're telling us the truth, aren't you? You aren't, well, just saying it to cheer us up and fob us off, are you? Just so we can put up with some more bad times like what we've had." The captain smiled in reassurance. "No, my young friends, no. You shall see your new home very soon. The worst is over for you, and for me too. And I think the Mayflower will be glad to get her anchors fixed once again. She's had a rough enough time of it." "How can you be so sure?" asked Justice. "There are no marks out in this wide sea." He waved vaguely at the ocean all round. "How can you tell where we are?" "No, that's true," replied the captain. "There are no marks, but I know we are very near to land." "How can you tell?" "Don't be so rude to the captain. Speak properly, Justice." "Hush, Prudence." Justice looked sheepish. "I'm sorry if I spoke rudely. I did not mean to." "Rude? No, inquisitive, that's what you are. You've got a large, healthy bump of curiosity, and that's good in a young 'un like you." The captain gave Justice an indulgent tap on the head. "You'd like to know. You'd like to know how I can tell we're near to landfall. Right, then I'll tell you. You see, there are two ways that I know that we're getting close to land." "Oh?" said Justice. By now he was thoroughly captivated. "Please tell us." "Aye, my boy, I will. Come with me, you too." He beckoned with his hand to Prudence and stepped out towards his cabin. The children followed as eager hounds, snapping at their master's heels. In a few moments they were all cosy within his cabin, the door closed behind them. All was peace and quiet except for the ever-present gentle murmur of the ship's timbers as they creaked and groaned in the surging sea. The brown, red-boarded room, though spacious and airy, was dominated by a massive mahogany table placed in its centre. The low, early winter sun peeped into the room, piercing the lattice in almost horizontal shafts. Specks of lazy dust danced dreamily in the beams of hazy light, falling gently and with no trace of hurry. The watery light played upon a much-stained chart as it lay pinned to the great table. There was a great deal of twinkling of shiny brass and polished red mahogany about the room. Pieces of strange, mysterious apparatus littered the walls. A dusty shelf of thick and well-worn books propped up in a corner. It was a veritable cave full of wonder and mystery. "Well, come in, my friends. Right welcome you are to my cabin." The captain opened his arms and ushered them in. "Now then, let's see, how can I tell where we are?" He reached out and picked up a wonderful brass and wooden instrument. It was circular in shape, with a cross in its centre. Attached to the centre were movable arms. "Do you know what this is, then, eh?" The children made no reply. Their puzzled, quizzical looks told all. Thought not. "Well, it's an astrolabe." "An astrolabe?" "What?" An astrolabe. Whatever's that?" "It's like this. By pointing it to the sun and moving these arms like this, see, I can take what we call a reading." Then he stepped over his bookshelf and whipped out a volume. "Then I look up this book of tables." He tapped the book with his fingers. "I look up the right table, and then I can tell our latitude." "Our latitude? What was that?" The children were mystified. "You don't know what latitude is. I see. "No, sir," the children replied meekly. "Ah, well, latitude, let me see now. Latitude tells me how far north or south we are. Do you see that?" "Yes, sir. But if I'm going to get our position right, that's only one thing I need to know. I also need to know how far west we've travelled from England." "How do you do that?" said Justice, his interest thoroughly aroused. "Well, I can tell how far west we are by working out our speed." "How do you do that?" "I use the login line," the captain replied.
"Login line?"
"Ah, we have a great heavy log with a rope tied to it. The rope is knotted along its length. These knots are spaced every 7 fathoms. When we want to tell the speed, we drop the log over the side. It's a very heavy log, so it doesn't move very much. It practically stays still. Well, that's what we allow for. And as we sail away from the log, the rope pays out, see? As we do it, we use the sandglass to measure a certain time, and we count the knots we've paid out on the rope in that time. Then, if our sums are good enough," he laughed, "we can work out how far we've travelled in that time. When we have those figures, we work out the speed. That tells me how far we've travelled each day in our westward journey. That's the longitude. And when I worked that out, and found our latitude, with the astrolabe, as I told you just now, I come in here to the charts, I draw the lines on my chart, and I can see where we are. The latitude line I draw east-west, and the longitude line north-south. Where they cross is where we are, do you see?" Justice thought for a moment. "Yes, but sir," he said slowly, "that can't be very accurate."
"Justice, whatever do you mean?" said Prudence, worried by her brother's impertinence.
"Justice, you mustn't be rude to the captain." She shook her brother's arm.
"No, Prudence," her brother replied, "I'm not being rude."
"No, of course he's not. He's interested, aren't you, lad?"
"Yes, sir, I am. Very interested."
"What do you mean, then? Not accurate?"
"Well, sir, it's like this," said Justice slowly. "It seems to me," he said, "that during a storm we might get blown off course. Well, we would do, wouldn't we? And in all those rough seas you might not be able to measure the speed, perhaps for days. And when the storm was all over, you would just have to guess how far we'd gone in those days."
"Quite right. Quite right, lad. Quite right. You put some of my leading seamen to shame, that you do."
He laughed and slapped his thigh.
"Let me tell you something else. That's not the only trouble. Think of this. Even when we do measure the speed in the normal way, the log must move about in the sea. True, it's heavy, but it must bob about a bit. For instance, what if there's tides and currents? The weight'll be thrown about, and that'll mess up me readings all right, won't it?"
"Ah, you're quite right, aye. 'Tis a rough and ready way. But see, it's the best we got."
"Of course, that's where the skill of being a proper navigator comes into it. I have to make allowance for all this."
He drew himself upright at his last remarks. "Where are we now?" He beckoned to them. Come over to the chart and I'll show you. He paused in front of the map and thought for a moment. The words came slowly. I reckon that we're not very far away from this position here. With that, his finger pointed to a spot upon the chart. The children stared at it in amazement. After a few moments, Justice spoke up. Why, he said, we're very near to land, sir. Aye, my boy. I said we were near to land. A twinkle came to his eyes, but do you know? I was sure of that even before I took the measurements. I said to you on deck that we're near to land. Do you remember? I knew that without any of this, said he, pointing to his instruments and books or tables. How did you know that? Said Prudence. Without the measurements, I mean. The captain said nothing in reply. Instead, he walked across to the door, opened it, and stepped out onto the deck. He beckoned the children to join him. They scurried out onto the deck. That's how I know we're near to land, he said, with a throaty chuckle and pointing to the sky. That's how I know. The children raised their eyes. I don't see anything, said Prudence. You do? You do, the captain exclaimed. You see exactly the same as I do, but you're not observing. He gently chided her. Look again and listen. I can hear the creaking of the boards, said Prudence. And the hiss of the sea, added Justice. Ah, prompted the captain. And what else? And some gulls screaming. Exactly, said the captain. Exactly. Gulls screaming. Gulls. That's how I know we're near to land. Those birds you can see up there have come out to join us, to welcome us. Aye. We're near to land, all right. We haven't had them with us all across the ocean, have we? No. So I should say that we're within a few hours of sighting land. A few hours, I reckon. He pointed up to the mainmast. I shall have my men up there very soon. You keep your eyes peeled and your ears open. Your days at sea are nearly over. Thank you, sir, said Justice. Thank you very much for telling us all about it. Not at all, not at all. If I judge rightly, you could have a good future ahead of you, if you wish to go to sea, my lad. Go to sea? I never want to see the sea again, Justice replied with feeling. He never wanted to see the sea again. Never. He had come to dread it. He feared its power. Nor do I, added Prudence. The voyage had satisfied a lifetime's curiosity about the sea for her. Ah, you will think better of it when you got your land legs back once more. And that'll be very soon now, I'm a-thinking. We're nearly there.